Welcome to the Combat Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Peacock. My guest today is Gene Cook Jr., also known in the jiu-jitsu community as BJJ Moses. He's a Carlson Gracie black belt and a BJJ gym owner in Temecula, California. Retaining information is one of the biggest problems for new students of Brazilian jiu-jitsu and virtually all other martial arts. This cascades into sparring, where students often find themselves drowning and confused as a result. To remedy this problem for his students, Gene developed a method he calls 8-Flow 1.0 that provides a schematic understanding of jiu-jitsu to flatten its notoriously steep learning curve. So if you're pumped to find out how 8-Flow works, hit the subscribe button on your podcatcher now. So let's jump in. So go ahead and tell us about you and your background as a martial artist and a coach real quick.
Well, I started late in life. I started jiu-jitsu when I was 46 years old. When I was young, when I was a teenager, I took taekwondo, a variation of taekwondo, which was tang sudo, for about 2 years. And I made it to, I quit right when I took my test to get the red belt. Everybody passed a test, so technically I would have been a red belt, but I never went back. I got my driver's license and I got sidetracked. So I just never went back. So then I started again when I was 46 at in jiu-jitsu, and I'm almost 57 now, so I've been at it a little over 10 years. And then I've been coaching. When I got my purple belt, which was back in 2015, I decided to help with the kids program. So I started coaching in the kids program, and then I kind of took a liking to it and took a liking to teaching jiu-jitsu, and everything kind of developed from there.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I remember you back in the dojo talking about how you used to teach the kids, and you used to do something that was more of a charity thing, didn't you? You used to head up.
Well, I started another program before I opened my own academy.
Yeah.
In Paris, Paris, California, not Paris, France. And it's kind of like in a low income area, but it took off really quick. Within 3 months, I had over 30 kids coming.
Yeah, that was
a dozen adults.
That was
cool. That program is still going, actually. And we're in the process right now. I just handed it off to another instructor, and he's actually looking for a permanent facility. So it looks like it's going to develop into a regular school.
That's awesome. I didn't know that. I'm glad to hear that update. Cause I remember I thought it was really cool back that you set up that program. That's a great way for you to get also coaching experience before you opened up your own academy.
Yeah. And yeah, helping out at the academy where I was training at and then starting my own program really gave me the confidence to open my own school.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess you have quite a bit of coaching experience by now, and I'm sure that you've come across this. Well, I know you've come across this a lot, and a lot of us that have taught martial arts before. Memory retention is an ongoing problem with students of probably any martial art. And so you've developed something, a method that you call the 8-Flow. What is the 8-Flow and how does it work?
So that is something that I just came out with. Actually, I published the first version of it last week on Vimeo. But it's called 8-Flow 1.0. And let me explain the name first. The name 8 represents the 8 most common positions in jiu-jitsu that are arranged in a hierarchy. So you have closed guard, half guard, side control, scarf hold, knee on belly, mount, and then back control. So those are the 8 positions that usually people end up in. If there's a scramble, they're going to end up in one of those positions. Turtle might be another option, would be the 9th position probably. But I realized in my coaching experience that everybody's ending up in one of these 8 positions. And so I started developing my curriculum with the kids, because I have a lot of kids that compete, with scenarios that are specifically related to those positions. And so I figured if I could show every kid how to get out of that position if they were on the defense, or every kid how to attack from those positions, or where to go next from those positions, it would be easy for them to navigate. So that's kind of like how it began to evolve. And then over the years, of course, everybody complains about information overload, because there are so many details in jiu-jitsu. You have no idea unless you start unless you're a jujitsu student, you have no idea how many details are. You can know a technique, like I've literally known a technique for 10 years, and then somebody shows me a new detail that makes it more efficient, and it just blows my mind. So for each, like for a submission, for example, you might have anywhere from 3 to 10 details that you have to memorize. And so what I did was I was brainstorming for years and years and years. How can we make this more memorable? And so what I started thinking was that when I was a kid, I'll give you an analogy. When I was a kid, my parents took us on vacation to Vallejo, California. And we went out in the car one day with my mom, and she got lost. Now, this is back in the 70s. So you don't have the only thing you could possibly do probably was stop and ask somebody for directions or go to a gas station and buy a paper map of the city. Those are your two options. So she's driving around and she gets lost. But I happen to recognize a water tower that you could see from the place that we were staying at. I said, "Hey, Mom, you see that tower over there?" Because, you know, in Vallejo, they have water towers. They don't have them down here in Southern California. I think most of the parts of the country they have them. Yeah. But I saw this water tower and I said, "Hey, you see that water tower?" Now, you got to keep in mind, I'm like probably 7 or 8 years old. I said, "See that water tower? If you can drive toward that water tower, you can actually see that water tower from our apartment or from the hotel." And so she said, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah." So she drove there and then she found the place we were staying. And so I use that analogy because a lot of times in jujitsu, maybe you're really good at doing a triangle from closed guard, or maybe you're good at doing an Americana from side control. But the problem is you don't remember how to get there, or you don't know how to get there. Those are two yeah. different issues. And so if you think about, let's say you're a new white belt, you've been training for 6 months or less, and you've got a couple of times where you've been in a side control position and you've been able to do an Americana. And so what I realize is if I could just get you back to side control from any of those eight positions, I could show you a path to success. And so just like that water tower that I recognized, if I put you in bottom side control and show you how to transition, go to half guard by re-guarding, do a half guard sweep, come up in side control, now I've given you 3 steps to essentially get to that water tower, which is going to take you home from there. And so that is, and the other problem I realized is that in a lot of tutorial videos, because there are so many details, you get information overload just mm-hmm. from the learning process. And so I intentionally made each of the videos less than 4 minutes long. And I only show one main thing on each video. And 1.0, 8flow 1.0, basically gives you an offensive option and a defensive option from each of those 8 positions to put yourself back to where you're comfortable at proceeding, or you're comfortable at finishing your opponent. And so that was my whole kind of thinking along the in the process. And then my son just asked me the other day, he's like, "What's 2.0 going to be?" And I said, "Well, I'm glad you asked. 8flow 2.0 will be, okay, you have all the techniques and the transitions from the first one, from 1.0. Now, what happens when you try the technique that I showed you and the guy counters it with the most common counter that I experience? So here's a counter to the most common counter that you're going to experience. And now we're going to go back and find the path again using a different technique because he shut down the first one. And then we can just keep building on it and building on it, building on it." They say that the linguists, I heard this commercial, and this is another piece that kind of sparked my thinking in this direction. There's a new mobile app. I don't know how new it is. It's called Babbel. And if you listen to the commercial on the radio, the guy says that the experts are telling us that we learn a language easier if we learn a sentence instead of a word.
Right. Yeah.
And so the word flow in my 8flow 1.0 is simply a flow chain that you might be familiar with if you were ever a wrestler, or basically It's a choreographed, for lack of a better term, step-by-step transition through submissions, escapes, and offensive moves that you can memorize. So you grab a partner and you start in a position and you start drilling without resistance. And the idea is, if you drill these little flow drills with repetitions, they will become second nature. And I see it in my students, because I've been teaching my students like this for a while now. And I see it in my students. I even see it in myself. So there's one, to give you an example of what I'm trying to point out here. There's one, it's actually our very first flow drill, which is different than the ones that I published. The ones that I published are new. But I published this flow drill number one. And there's one part of the flow drill where you take your arm and you move it to the other side of the person's head. And I actually caught myself doing this when I'm showing a technique that doesn't involve that piece. Hmm. And then I turned to my students and I said, oh, I did that from muscle memory without even thinking, because that's flow drill number one. I had another student as a white belt go to a tournament and win 4 gold medals in one day, 2 in wow. no-gi and 2 in the gi. He'd only been training with me for about 4 months, I think, at that point. But I had taught him a few of these drills, and he was able, he said, really, that's the only thing that came back to me in the heat of the moment was the transition drills. And so he's doing them and I'm watching them. I'm like, yep, that's drill number one. Oh, that's drill number four. And he had nothing but success. He's like, man, he accredited his win to memorizing those drills that I was teaching.
So his mind kind of reverted to that, because that yes. was, those were the positions he was comfortable with. So you gave him kind of a home base.
Yes.
Go back through. And I guess
I like to think of it as a path. I give yeah. you need to get to point A, but somehow you ended up on point D. Mm-hmm. How do I get from D back to A? And if I can show you, oh, here's 3 steps to get from here to there. If you can memorize those 3 steps, because timing is everything in jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. If you stay a half of a second ahead of your opponent, that's enough to put him on the defense and beat him. But yeah. if I have to stop at each position and think about, okay, what are my options here and which one do I want to choose? Now I've allowed too much time for my opponent to decide what he wants to do. And now he's escaping and I'm responding to his escape instead of pressing the action and moving forward.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I think people would be, they would liken it to a kata, but the difference between what you've put together here and a kata would be, you're actually basing the flow on the real behaviors of the most common yes. movements and stuff that you're going to actually find in the wild. Now, people might do other things, but nobody can actually account for the creativity of an individual. So what you've done is you've actually made people, you've flattened the curve as far as people, they have to go through months and months and months of experience to actually learn this stuff.
Yeah. To realize what happens.
Realize it.
Yeah.
And then you've actually given them, hey, here's probably the most high percentage ways to get yourself back to where you want to be. And then people, they have kind of a schema or a map from all yes. the major positions, how to transition from one to the other. And then you decide, well, this is the position I'm most comfortable in. And so yeah. you adjust that hierarchy based on what you like to do. But you already have knowledge from all the positions. So it's almost like you can individualize it
yeah.
yourself.
So there's what we call a predictable behavior. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the first one to point this out, obviously, but we teach students, when somebody does this, you do this. And it's very common across the board. Like 90% of all jiu-jitsu schools are going to teach, because it comes from the same place. Hey, when he does this, you should do this. Mm-hmm. Right. So for example, here's an example that just comes to the top of my head. If you see him, if you're in his closed guard and he reaches up and breaks your posture down, you need to posture back up. Don't let him break your posture, right? And that's the correct thing to do. But if my flow drill is based upon predictable behavior, which is the most common things that people do and that people should do, then we're staying one step ahead. And I know, like I've had, I'm only 10 years in. So there's guys that are my age, they're 30 years in, 40 years in, if they started training as a kid. So relatively speaking, my knowledge is quite limited, but I roll with my students and I like to spar. So on average, I'll spar five, 6 minute rounds each class. I'm training morning and evening. So I travel and I go other places on my days off. I train when I'm on my vacation. Excuse me. So I have a huge pool of information, of data to pull from. And yeah. I know the most common responses. I can almost tell when I get here what's going to happen next. And so I'm anticipating that. And that allows you to stay ahead of your opponent. Timing is so critical in jiu-jitsu, because it's not enough to know what to do. It's not enough to know what to do and be physically able to do it, but you have to know what to do, be physically able to do it, and know when to do it. And if you're too late on the when to do it, then you just, it's too late. Mm-hmm. You have a small window of opportunity.
Yeah.
So if we can kind of speed up that thinking process, I like to teach my students that your skill set, your arsenal, your weapons are kind of like drop-down lists. So I like to visualize a drop-down list. And then I place all of my options in a hierarchy, right? So for example, if somebody pulls guard on me and I end up inside their guard, I've got about 5 different things that I like to do if I'm inside of somebody's guard. But I have my go-to move first. So if you can imagine a drop-down list, that would be the first one. But if that doesn't work, then I have to go to the second one. I do my second favorite thing. And then I just keep going down the line, because maybe he has a counter for every single one. But, and then if he does, I need to start mixing them up and get a reaction, because all of these counters work together. If he shuts down number one on the drop-down list, a lot of times he's vulnerable on this side, which gives me number two on the drop-down list. And so recalling the data has to happen quickly. This is why there's no shortcuts in jiu-jitsu. The only way to get good is to spend time on the mat, because mm-hmm. you have to train your mind and your body to work together. It's like driving down the road, talking to somebody, and really not paying attention to your. I've been driving since I was 16 years old. So I've literally been driving for over 40 years. I can talk to you on the phone, observe all the laws and the traffic signals and all that, and make sure that I'm driving safe without even thinking about it. Sometimes I'll travel like a mom. I'm like, man, there's been a couple of times where I'm like, where the heck am I? Like, I knew I was on this road, but I didn't remember. Oh, here I am. Okay. And because yeah. I'm talking, I'm going in the right direction. And we see this too. Like, if you ever live somewhere and then you moved, it's very common to take the wrong turn back to your old house.
Yeah.
Because you've done it so many times, you're not thinking about it. You're like, but if we can train our mind through repetition, it's just repetition. If we can memorize these drills and do reps, it'll become second nature. And it'll help us improve our timing so much, it'll blow your mind. So that's really my approach.
Yeah, and that's another way in which it's better than I guess like you have a partner drill, right? Like you have a partner with you.
Yes.
And you're actually seeing the person move in the way that you have to observe them moving in a competition or in rolling. So that you, because like specificity of information is really important. Like this podcast is really about sports science and motor learning and motor control. And part of the problems with a lot of traditional martial arts training, because I did Taekwondo and I still do Taekwondo and as well as Jiu-Jitsu. A part of the problem with traditional martial arts training is you spend so much time in the air or on partners that don't move in the way that they do in sparring, that you never have a chance to see how the body moves enough times on enough people to recognize the cue of when you should make a certain action. Yeah. And so what you're doing is you're slowing everything down. It's more structured, but it but it's also more representative, I guess, in a way than, yeah, than a kata would be.
I'm also using a very basic approach. The fundamentals of jiu-jitsu, arm bars, triangles, Americanas, Kimuras, those were the original submissions that were the killers.
Yeah.
Those submissions are still killers. It's just that we want to evolve in our presentation. And so you have all these videos of people doing all these fancy techniques. And yeah, some of them work and some of them are garbage. But I can tell you that I literally tapped, I just thought about this the other day. I literally tapped 4 brown belts in tournaments with an Americana. I learned the Americana the first 2 weeks I was a white belt.
Yeah.
So that goes to show you right there, you don't have to have anything flashy or, you know, new, novel. You just have to be efficient at the fundamentals, which are time tested. And so I know because I've done it in competition, it's not just a theory for me. I know that you can take what I'm teaching here, and I've seen success with these simple, very easy 1-2-3 step transitions and basic submissions all the way to brown belt. And so I know, and because I constantly focused on the fundamentals, I know all of the common responses to what I'm going to do. And so if I have a contingency plan for every response I see, then I win or I get ahead and then I move into a position that's favorable.
Yeah. You're at least in a good position. You're not reeling. There's a website. I think it's highpercentagemartialarts.com. They took like IBJJF data on, wins and then the method of win. Yeah. And they found something like that literally the arm bar is like the top one across gi and no gi. Everyone is getting arm bars. And then you have RNC for no gi. And I think it's the sliding collar choke or the bow and arrow for gi. And like those are the top two.
Yeah.
And then as you go down the list, it's Americana, triangle.
Yeah. Triangle,
and
yeah.
It's literally the most basic techniques are distributed across white belt to the highest level of black belt. Those are the ones that continue to emerge and not like crazy different variations of loop chokes and things like that. Those are, just to be on a tangent for a second, those are things that I would call personal style. And some people develop a high level of skill with some of those weird techniques that they can make it work. But that's not something that's really good for you to teach to other people, because how you got to that point and develop that timing is pretty unique to you.
It is.
And you can't reconstruct an entire game for somebody just to teach them one or two techniques. Mm-hmm. So that's just me off on, you know, kind of a motor learning thing, but you shouldn't. And I think jiu-jitsu instructors have become increasingly good about this, because I hear this a lot on jiu-jitsu podcasts. They say they're saying now, don't teach your game to your people, you know, teach them all the fundamentals, the basic techniques, the stuff that works the best and all the most common sweeps and all that kind of stuff. And then later on, you can look at people and say, well, he's kind of a lankier guy. Maybe I'll show him some of this stuff, or just let him develop it. Like Matt Thornton lets his guys experiment a lot, and they develop their own stuff. But don't try and teach, you know, this weird worm guard thing.
Well, that's the problem. If your game is not fundamental, so I kind of have the best of both worlds, though. Because my game is fundamental, mm-hmm. It's okay to teach my students my game. I am teaching my students my game. But let's take an example. Let's say that my game is worm guard or lapel guards in general. And that's all that's what I really enjoy using. And that's what I really enjoy teaching.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then now you've got a little bit of a problem, or you could have a potential problem. Let me put it that way. If you ignored the fundamentals, and we see this, I suppose I could use a different analogy. I think you know where I'm going, but so there are some schools that teach, leg locks right out of the gate. We started teaching them right out of the gate too, but like every day, like on a certain day, okay, today guys, we're going to focus on legs. And then we explain to the new people, look, we want to get you moving in this direction, but don't worry about executing a knee bar or a toe hold or a heel hook yet, because you've only been trained for 2 months. We want you to see it. We want you to start moving, but there'll be plenty of time to perfect this later. But that's us. There's other schools that week one, we're going to teach you how to do a heel hook and you can use this in sparring. And that's, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that until you learn how to escape from side control or how to pass the guard, mm-hmm. probably shouldn't be learning these advanced submissions. Right. Because what happens is, and I've gone to some of these, I've rolled with some people who are white belts and blue belts. Mm-hmm. One role comes to mind, a guy that was a white belt. And I started rolling with him without the gi at another school. And he immediately put me in a leg entanglement. And I had to really be smart about getting out. I'm a black belt. This is a white belt.
Hey guys, real quick before the episode continues. If you're wondering how you can supercharge your training in a way that helps you actually perform better on the mat or in the ring, I've got the perfect thing for you. I've taken the scientific concept known as transfer of learning and distilled it down into a handful of dead simple, easy to understand rules you can use to supercharge your training today. And the best part is that it almost always makes training more fun, not less. Now you don't have to spend hours and hours of drilling just to fail when your practice gets tested in sparring or competition. Instead, you can take these simple rules and transform your drills and exercises into rapid skill-building machines. Your classmates and training partners won't believe your progress. And if you're an instructor, your students will get better faster than ever and have more fun while doing it. Go to combatlearning.com/transfer to sign up to our email list and grab your transfer cheat sheet now. Plus, you'll never miss an episode and get access to exclusive tips. And just to say thanks, I'll send you my Introduction to Motor Learning for Martial Arts PDF so you can get up to speed on the powerful concepts we're discussing on this podcast. So go to combatlearning.com/transfer now to get your cheat sheet and other goodies. That's combatlearning.com/transfer, TRANSFER.
Yeah. So I said, okay, I could see like he's been learning leg entanglements. So I didn't give him my leg. Passed my guard, mounted him. He was stuck. He could yep. not escape my mount. He probably outweighed me by about 75 pounds. So if you neglect the fundamentals and you go straight to the advanced, then you have a whole different set of problems.
Yeah.
And so I'm, because I'm an older athlete and because I'm not real, I'm not real fast or real agile, real flexible. The fundamental game works very well for me and it allows me to teach it to my students. All of my students are good, or I should say most of them are really good at half guard, at bottom half guard, because I play a lot of bottom half guard. So I can shorten the learning curve through the trial and error that I had to experience myself. I basically played half guard for 3 years straight to get to where I was comfortable teaching it and showing everybody the different things to expect. And so for me, because my game is fundamental, I'm okay with teaching. But the thing that sucks about teaching your students your game is then they start beating your own game. Or not necessarily beating it, but shutting it down.
Yeah.
And so, but that's good for me too, because it makes me work harder to overcome.
Right.
He knows what I'm doing. Okay. Which a black belt should know what I'm doing. And I have to work around that, given the fact that he knows, which makes it more challenging. Which makes me better, makes him better.
Yeah, there's no growth without discomfort.
That's true.
You have to be in a situation that's just a little bit beyond your comfort level to start actually adapting to that and getting better. So yeah, you don't want to be schooling everybody with half guards. I started in Gordo lineage school, so we did a lot of half guard too. So when I went and learned like other stuff like lockdown and stuff like that, mm-hmm. that stuff's cool, but I felt more comfortable with Gordo's half guard game because I can, like, the way he crosses his legs, you can post with your leg to help you with the underhook and work your way to like a back door or something like that and go for that classic sweep he does from there. So yeah, the half guard game, really cool, near and dear to my heart. because I started in a Gordo place. But yeah,
see, so the lockdown. There's a lot of value in the lockdown.
Yeah,
there you is. Have to have a good half guard foundation, mm-hmm. I think, to effectively use half guard with lockdown together.
Yeah, yeah, I think I've found myself using half lockdown more like I guess they used to use it in like Kosen Judo, where I started getting into it because they were breaking my regular half guard, and I was using that to straighten their leg back.
Yeah.
So that I could actually transition quickly and start working from something I'm more comfortable with, because I'm not comfortable with the whole 10th planet lockdown guard game with the whip up and all that kind of thing. I'm not good at that, but I am pretty good at getting that underhook and trying to shrimp a little bit and push him over and coming out the back and looking for that sweep. So that's what I was trying to survive to get back to.
Gotcha.
Instead of doing his whole game, all the weird leg locks and rolls and things you can do from there. But yeah, definitely. So what you've done is you've actually distilled a lot of information, because some instructors are like, they'll tell you, yeah, it's a lot. So you're just going to have to go through the curriculum and stuff will start to stick and eventually you'll put together. What you've done is you've put the map together first and discreetly enough that they're able to learn it in a more condensed amount of time, so that they have a broader idea of the game earlier.
That's the goal. And then here's something else that I haven't mentioned yet, is that we use these flow drills for our warm-up. So instead of coming in and running for 5 minutes and doing jumping jacks and burpees, which some gyms do for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
We will do these drills for 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're doing we're doing jujitsu for 30 minutes to warm up so we can do jujitsu.
Yeah.
But it's really cool because what I did was I made a big blackboard and I basically drew 26 drills up on the board. And then I have some students at my school that will video me demonstrating the technique or the drill. And then we post it for all of our students. And so then in the beginning of the week, I send out a text message saying, this is the new drill that we're learning this week. Please review it before you come to class.
Okay.
So then they review it, they come to class, and then they can review it again after they learn it. And then by the end of the week, our goal is to learn a new drill each week. So with 26 drills, we have 6 months of curriculum. So we learn a new drill. We do two or three drills that we already know, and then we're ready to learn a technique. And a lot of time we'll just learn a technique, a submission, or another piece that's related to the drill that we're learning for the week. Like this week, for example, is the takedown drill. So we do five different takedowns. And then your partner switches. So you'll do a double leg. You'll shoot a double leg five times. And then the last time you'll actually complete the double leg. And then it's the other guy's turn. He shoots in five times, one, two, and then on number five, he dumps you and he lands in side control.
That sounds like a wrestling drill.
Yeah, and then we do a single leg.
Yeah.
And then we'll do, for example, a double leg trip. Or we'll do an ankle pick or something like that. But yeah, I got the idea from wrestling, because wrestlers have been doing this for years. And what do wrestlers do? They drill, 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 drill. And the ones that drill the most are usually the best.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, there's no mystery there. It's all about creating muscle memory and making these actions happen, without even thinking about it subconsciously.
That's really cool. Yeah. And the cool thing, I think another reason that makes it kind of better than it being like, people might say it's a dynamic kata, but it's more discreet, right? Because you're drilling the entry. You're not doing a complex sequence of different, throws and takedowns. So it really helps you because you make that entry really crisp and then you add the ending to it.
So here's something else that we'll typically do. So let's say that we're doing, like this week, we're doing a takedown drill. So we'll teach the takedown drill at the beginning of class. And then we'll, as the week progresses, we won't have to teach as much. We're just kind of correcting a few things. And then if it looks like everybody's got it, we'll say, okay, Everybody go on the wall. Let's get three people in the middle. Okay. Come take them down with resistance. He's going to try to stuff your takedown. You have to take him down. You can use one of the five. You can only use one of the five takedowns that we did in the drill. So he doesn't know which one's coming, but he knows one of them's coming. So that's how we drill it with resistance. Then once a person can hit it with resistance, their confidence level rises and they're like, oh, I'm going to try this during class. You know, how many times have you heard a new student? He's like, this is my second week. I literally know nothing. Well, that's how we all come in, right? But if you were my student and you started on Monday of this week, by Monday of next week, if you came to class three times, you'd know five takedowns. And we would be reviewing that drill again at the beginning of class the following week before we learned the new one. So when I implemented this program, I watched a 13-year-old kid come in who didn't know any jiu-jitsu. And within 1 month, learning four different drills, he could show you a knee slice, a transition to mount, a transition to north-south. He could show you how to pass the guard. He could show you how to get a submission from the mount position. He could show you how to take the back from mount. Like, an incredible amount of information he was able to learn in a short amount of time just because we were teaching him the drills. And so if we spend the warm-up time of the class on drills instead of on just basic exercises, I think we're using our time a lot more wisely.
Yeah, I agree. Target warm. I just can't stand warm-ups. I hate all the jiu-jitsu warm-ups except for the, you know, I've gone to maybe one class that had targeted warm-ups where it was a Lucas Lepre class, like an intermediate class where they were doing like little jiu-jitsu mini games almost where you were fighting for double underhooks or something, you know, something similar to that, or like a miniature guard passing kind of thing. Yeah. Something that's actually fun, kind of low impact, and that actually builds a discrete skill within the jiu-jitsu skill set. Mm-hmm. That stuff is fun. That stuff is useful. That stuff is what people want to do. Purple belts are less likely to show up late to class if you have something like that instead of running circles. It's god awful.
Everybody does it too.
Yeah.
The first jiu-jitsu school that I went to, the instructor, about 6 months in, a new black belt came. And for 30 minutes, this guy, the class was 1 hour. It wasn't even 90 minutes. For 30 minutes, this guy would kill us. He has us running suicides. We're bear crawling. We're doing burpees. And I'm like, I was a blue belt by this time. I'm thinking, well, this must be what you do in jiu-jitsu. And so when I went, that school ended up closing down, surprise, surprise. And I would see people come. Finally, a guy would show up and he'd be like my age. I'm like, oh man, I'm so glad you're here. I'm the same age as you. And they couldn't make it through the warm-up. They're quitting because of the warm-up.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I just can't. This is too hard for me.
Yeah.
And I said, it'll get easier. And he's like, no, it's just, this is not what I came here for.
Yeah.
And I understand that now. But when I went to my new professor, Professor Tom Cronin, I said, when do we do the cardio stuff? And he's like, what do you mean? And I said, when are we going to work on improving our cardio? He goes, that's what rolling is for. And I said, don't we need to improve our cardio for rolling? He said, look, the best way to improve your cardio for rolling is to roll. If you're gassing out after six rounds, then roll eight. So,
Dude, imagine that. Imagine rolling to get better at rolling. some people, they try to approach things a little too cerebral for their own good.
They do.
And they end up with these overly complex, they end up stuff that's actually does not match the human learning system. It just has nothing to do.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that environment that I'm speaking about where he said, we just roll to get in shape for tournaments. We just roll. Yeah. We roll more.
Yeah.
And the room is full of killers that don't get tired.
Right.
And I'm like, man, so much time I wasted on
come to find out, cardio is like weightlifting. Like the way, you know, if you lift a certain way, you're going to get strong in that lift. If you do cardio a certain way, that's the cardio you're going to get better at.
Yeah. And your body adapts, and running on a treadmill is great, but it doesn't necessarily help your jujitsu cardio. Mm-mm. You know, when you got a guy that's 200 pounds sitting on your chest.
Yeah. You're engaging different energy systems, and you're using your muscles exactly. In totally different ways. It's different. The people, you know, martial artists, they come up a certain way. They don't know any of this. They don't know how any of this stuff works. So
it's interesting to me. Like we just kind of accept stuff at face value because we're new. Like, I suppose I'm the type of person that questions everything. In the beginning, I'm like, okay, I question this, but honestly, I don't know enough to make a judgment. These guys are the experts. So you trust them. And until you see somebody doing it differently, getting different results, and then you're like, mm-hmm. okay. So the whole thing about not attacking the legs, you know, I bought into the Kool-Aid because I was taught from day one, we don't attack legs because it's too dangerous, right? And it can be dangerous, but anything can be dangerous. An armbar can be dangerous. A Kimura can be dangerous. An Americana can be dangerous. I've seen injuries from all those positions. But you realize that there's a reason why certain things are the way they are, and it's not always as they appear, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there was a little bit of a history with the Gracie family and leg locks in the early days that caused them, for whatever reason, to say, we're going to ban these submissions from our rule set. And they did. And to this day, they're just opening up 2021, making a few subtle changes in that direction. So I'm happy about that.
Did somebody lose to a leg lock? Is that why they got rid of them?
All of them did. So they met, rumor has it, I don't know the exact facts. Rumor has it that there was another team that they met and all the guys were doing leg locks. And they said, no, we don't, because they hadn't trained for them. They weren't really part of the system that they were advancing or learning or teaching. And so, but in Sambo, other places, they specialize in those things, catch wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the guys who were incorporating those things were getting success again, because the guard, what is the guard? The guard is like handing somebody your foot. An open guard is literally handing somebody your foot. Well, as soon as you allow the lower half of the body to be attacked, that changes everything.
Yeah.
So if you've been playing your guard game for 10 years and all of a sudden now, you throw your legs up there and the guy sits back and leg locks, you're like, wow, I got to rethink this. Mm-hmm. So, they're making some changes, and I'm hoping that they will eventually, I'm speaking of the IBJJF, mm-hmm. which is headed up by Carlos Gracie Jr. I'm hoping that they will eventually allow heel hooks and reaping for all brown belts and black belts, not just adults who are 29 and younger.
So I thought they had like heel hooks legal for after black belt, but that's only for the young guys?
This year is the first year that they are allowing it, and it's only for the adult division, which is age 18 to 29.
Oh, okay. So masters aren't doing it, like the people.
No masters, okay. Which
drives that's weird. Crazy, that's yeah. I don't understand. I don't get that.
They might be, I'm thinking, hopefully they're just testing the waters to see like what is the injury rate going to be. Mm-hmm. They probably figure that the adult division is the most resilient. So if somebody gets hurt, you know, it's a quicker recovery than it is if you're 55 mm-hmm. years old or whatever.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So I guess we're closing up here. You kind of talked about some of the results you've seen, but I wanted to see if you had like, if you remember kind of how your students were before you implemented these eight flow type drills, like how long it took them to acquire techniques and kind of understand the game on a broader level versus after you implemented this.
So that's a great question. I taught, so today, by the way, I didn't mention this yet, but today, March 25th is actually our 4-year anniversary from the day that we opened our academy.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. So it's amazing that 4 years has gone by this quick and that I've been teaching full time for 4 years. That blows my mind too. But what I did was when I opened the academy all the way until January 1st of this year, I taught differently. So what I would do is I knew that there were eight basic positions that people were landing in. Mm-hmm. So I made that observation a long time ago. That's nothing new for me. And so what I did was I put them in a hierarchy of worst to best. So worst would be close guard, best would be back control. And I would spend 2 to 3 months on each position. So for 2 to 3 months, I would show you everything I knew about close guard. I would show you how to break close guard, how to pass close guard, how to sweep from close guard, and how to submit from close guard. And that would literally take 3 months. And then I would move to half guard. The problem is, if you came in, right, and you were brand new, for 6 months, you would only learn two positions. Hmm. Right? There's a lot. So anytime my students were in one of the other positions, they were lost. And so I would tell people, don't worry about how to escape from mount. We're going to teach you that. We'll teach you that later. You just stick around. This is how we do it, right? And so when we were out for quarantine, I had a lot of time to sit around and think. And so I decided that I was going to make this change because I had already created about 2 or 3 of these flow drills. And I had implemented them from time to time. And I noticed, and that one student that I told you about that won 4 gold medals in one day, he was one of the guys that I taught 3 of these drills to. And he was raving on and on about how we should do more of that and how it helped him so much. So on January 1st of this year, I announced, look, on January, we actually started back in December, but I said officially on January 1st, we're going to learn 26 new drills. And it will take us at least 6 months. So by the time February 1st came around, I had literally students coming up to me going, oh my gosh, I've made so much progress in the last 30 days. This is starting to come together now. I don't feel lost anymore. I was getting I haven't had one person give me a negative feedback. It'll probably happen eventually, but
it hasn't happened yet. Why are the drills so long? I can't remember.
Why are we just doing these drills?
It's always somebody.
At the other place, they do handstands and cartwheels. So, in one situation, I had another instructor come in and he went up to one of my white belts and said, it was no-gi, so he didn't know. He goes, are you a blue belt? And he said, no, I'm a white belt. He goes, oh, wow, you're moving really well. Like you're moving like a blue belt. And the guy came and told me, hey, that professor asked me if I was a blue belt. And he says, it's because of the drills. Like he told me that. I'll get some testimonials together from some of my students and publish them. I'm getting nothing but positive feedback. So here we are almost almost a full 3 months into the year. And the students are still constantly telling me how much it's helped them. And the new students seem to be picking up jujitsu quicker. Mm-hmm. And so not all of the drills so the 8 flow 1.0 is all the basic drills, the most basic ones. It's the starting point. I couldn't do 26 like super basic drills because I have purple belts. So I mix them up. I have a combination of advanced drills and I have a combination of basic drills in those 26 drills. But I'll tell the students, okay, now this is going to be a more advanced drill. And we use X guard. We're going to do an X guard sweep in this drill. I didn't learn X guard until I was a purple belt. So if you don't get it the first time around, Mr. White Belt, it's okay. We'll come back to it. But you'd be amazed by doing reps, how it begins to come together, especially by the end of the week.
Yeah.
There was a tournament in December and one of my white belts did an X guard sweep. He pulled guard. He went to single leg X. The guy removed the hook from the hip. He transitioned to X guard and swept him. And I'm turning around the guy next to me. I said, did you see that X guard sweep? That's one of my white belts. I never could do an X guard sweep until I was like the end of purple belt, maybe brown belt. and so it's working very well. I'll just leave it at that. I'm very satisfied with the results.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even in the absence of like, you don't have like a formal study on their skill level, but your students there's a change in their cognition on it.
Yeah.
And that really means something. So now the fact that they're not confused anymore as a result of these drills is really, really meaningful. So even if you haven't studied the exact mechanical difference between before and after, just the fact that they have that mental clarity means that there are benefits for their performance downstream. Like it's like impossible that there isn't, I think, because they understand the game better. And that means that because they're not lost, their performance is not impeded by that anxiety or a lack of knowledge in a given position. So, I mean, that's really incredible. And it speaks to, I'm really a big proponent of trying to do more positional, like live training as much as possible, but there is a place for training that is a little bit more scripted. I think you said it was more choreographed before. That was the word you used. There is a place for more scripted, but it's particular, right?
Yeah.
It needs to be based on real behavior and then some sort of actual, whether it's self-defense stuff that you've observed from CCT or closed circuit television or actual tournaments, because you do the sport jujitsu or another sport modality. It has to actually be based on something real that is observable and continues to pop up.
And that's what makes jujitsu technique. That's what makes jujitsu technique unique is what I meant to say.
Yeah.
Because you can test jujitsu with a common rule set with 100% resistance. Mm-hmm. And so we call it pressure testing. I didn't come up with that name. I think Eddie Bravo might have come up with that. But pressure testing, right? When you patch an inner tube, you have to do a pressure test before you put it on the car or the bicycle. You got to make sure it's going to hold air. And so it's not enough just to throw a patch on it. You have to be able to test it. So every class, we're adding resistance to something to make sure that it's not just choreographed.
Yeah. Awesome. Great. Excellent. Well, thank you for coming on the show. I hope we can have another discussion later after you've developed your 2.0. And
I will, I'm going to do a no-gi version too. I'll do a no-gi version for 1.0.
Cool.
And then, if people want to find it, they can just search the number 8 flow 1.0, on Google. It's on the videos are being hosted on Vimeo.com. Mm-hmm. And then also, if you don't mind, I'm going to be really doing a big launch of my apparel company, Moses Kimono Company. So if you search that online, you'll find it. The new website is not up yet, and I'm coming out with a whole line of gis. The prototypes are being manufactured right now. So I got a lot of good stuff coming down the pike. I'm looking forward to sharing it with people.
Yeah. Awesome. Where else can people find you? Like, just to follow you personally, Instagram?
Yeah. I post a ton of content. That's probably the most common place you're going to find me, and where I post most of my stuff, Instagram. BJJ Moses on Instagram.
BJJ Moses.
That's my nickname, my jujitsu nickname. That was
It's a cool one. I love how your apparel company kind of goes in, like your gi is called Exodus Elite. I was like, oh, that's good. That's clever. I like that. So those really look sharp. So
I've got a new design that I'm coming out with, and the color scheme I've never seen another gi that uses the color scheme like this. And I made a run of about 30 gis and sold them all out right away to my students. So I'm super excited. And I'll let you know when they're available to check out.
That sounds good.
Thanks so much for listening to the Combat Learning Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, remember to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice. It really helps us out. Finally, this episode, including the intro music, is produced by Micah Peacock. Thanks in advance. and I'll see you on the next episode.